Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis. We're bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on Tuesday, March 11th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Glad to be here today?
It's just one of those things.
What else?
As compared to some places I could be, yeah, I'm definitely glad. As compared to a few other places I could be, well, I don't know. You know, it's debatable.
Well, it was a good place for gold today. We had gold up 780 right now in the New York spot price, 1348. You have silver. Silver's struggling. Had a high of 21.42. It was off strong this morning. And, of course, as the day whittled through, they whittled silver 2094. Great buying opportunity. Platinum was down $13, so maybe she went down with the rest of the white metals a little bit, the other industrial metals. Platinum again down 13 at 1469, along with palladium down 7 at 772. The USDX today still under 80, 79.77, up 0.02. Crude oil broke 100, 99.72, down $1.40. Paper markets today, we're looking at the, they were all down. It just always cracks me up, the headlines and the reasons why they fell. The Dow was down 67 points at 16,351. The NASDAQ was down 27 at 4,307. The S&P was down 10 at 1867. 10-year yield, 2.78%. And there's concerns of global economy. There are fears. How about that, Al?
I think we're all in a state of terror. Ever since it snowed in the winter, it got cold in the winter. I don't know what's become of the world, Melody. Nothing seems predictable or reasonable anymore.
No.
And particularly given that Al Gore has assured us that we are in the midst of global warming. Oh my God! But the economy collapses. The economy collapses because we had cold weather in the wintertime. Oh Lord!
I'm glad that it can amuse us. There's always the bright side.
It amuses me. I'm easily amused. I saw something on the internet just yesterday or the day before. an old cowboy was making a comment. He's sitting on his rocking chair out in front of his cabin, and he's watching the dog chase his tail for 10 minutes. And the cowboy says, you know, I watched that dog chase its tail for 10 minutes, and I thought, those dogs are easily amused. And then I thought, you know, I just watched that dog chase its tail for 10 minutes. Meaning the cowboy is also easily amused. So what can I say?
Well, something that was could be amusing is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac today. Their common shares of the federally controlled mortgage companies dropped. They were off more than 30% each after U.S. lawmakers came out today. And they said they're going to release a blueprint today for a housing finance reform proposal. So they did do this. They drafted a bill that would begin to wind down the Fannie and Freddie. And this is from the leaders of the Senate Banking Committee. The common shares didn't start dropping until a couple hours after it was released. And when you look at what they did release prior to they're going to whittle it around and make changes to this and so forth, it's what they're saying is it's going to protect the taxpayers with strong private capital will be the backing, and they will create a new branch of for the housing market to replace the Fannie and Freddie. So it would replace the U.S.-owned mortgage companies with a government insurer behind private capital. So they're still going to issue bonds. Now, this bill would require most borrowers to make down payments of at least 5% in this new housing finance system. Doesn't seem like anything's changed, has it, Al?
No, it sounds like subprime mortgage or subprime borrowers again, and they're going to try to let anyone, if you can come up with, it's not 0% down, but it's getting close to that. 5% down isn't much. That's $5,000 on a $100,000 home. It's $10,000 on a $200,000 home. Not a lot of money. It opens the doors for, again, subprime borrowers, which opens the doors again for the kind of debacle we saw in 2007-2008, although we might not see it for another year or two before the subprime borrowers actually hit the wall and find out, oops, they can't make the payments, which can trigger another round of whatever it was we got. What actually happened back in 2008? Has anyone ever decided? Was it a recession, an anomaly, first step in a depression? What was it, Melody? Does anyone know?
You could take your
pick. Because I know we're in a state of pre-recovery. The recovery is
we're in a recovery. Yes, yeah. We're in a recovery. But so that put a lot of pressure on those companies. But again, there isn't anything that changes. I mean, they're trying to avoid what happened before in the housing market. Well, how can you avoid that when you're starting with 5% down in this new system? And it's still going to be backed by government. If these private investors receive a 10% loss, the government will come in and they're going to sell bonds to cover that. So, I mean, it's, you know, we talked about
this
prior.
So here's what the deal is. Somewhere along the line, the subprime borrower comes in, puts down 5% and gets a $200,000 home. Now, the reason he can get that is because the government will have found some other private investors who will guarantee that the subprime borrower makes his payments. And part of the way the government will seduce the private creditors into backing the subprime borrower's mortgages is the government will assume the responsibility of insuring any loss by the private creditors, if you catch my drift. And where I'm going with this is, why do we need three levels of insurers on this thing? We used to have just Freddie Mac insured the mortgage. Now we're going to get private investors to insure the mortgage, and the government is going to insure the private investors. And all it sounds like, without seeing all the details, it sounds like the architectural drawing for a house of cards.
Almost. Even,
you know, it's one of those old, what was the name? It wasn't P.T. Barnum, but those chain reactions where an egg rolls down a slide and it knocks a domino that moves things forward and bang, bang, bang. I can't remember the name of them. They used to be fanciful and popular back in the 50s and 60s.
Almost sounds like derivatives, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like the whole system, really.
Yeah. But so that'll be interesting. The new federal agency is going to be called the Federal Mortgage Insurance Corporation. So let's
keep what a snappy title. That's important, Melody. Whenever you come out with a new and improved agency, you've got to have a snappy title. That means something.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just more of the same. Oklahoma came out today. They're passing, they've passed legislation to replace traditional public employee pension plans with a 401k style retirement plan for the many, many new state workers. And it passed the measure by 57-42 today. And they sent it to the state Senate, which has already approved similar legislation, which is interesting because if it's already approved similar legislation, what does that say compared to this? Anyway, under the bill by the Republican Rep. Randy McDonnell of Edmond, state workers hired after November 1st, 2015 would be shifted from the current defined benefit pension plan to the 401k style plan. The change would not apply to teachers or public safety employees like police officers and firefighters. It's just you guys out there on the job. Supporters.
Did it actually say they would be shifted, or did it say they would be shafted?
It depends on your occupation.
I guarantee all this is just a way. Exactly. They're going to, if you start working after whatever date it was in 2015, the government is planning. They are planning with this 401k. I will bet you money that if you look at it, read it closely, go through the fine print, you will see that the government is planning to beat the new employees out of their pension funds. They're going to do it legally. See, now the ones that are already working there, that's different. It won't quite be legal, but nevertheless, you can bet the government's going to try to do it. So the the employees will be shifted and or shafted by the government. So
they say the bill is going to help reduce the estimated $11.6 billion in unfunded liability in the state's public pension system. So opponents say eliminating the pension will make saving for retirement riskier for state workers.
Well, I don't think it's going to be any riskier
than what it's
right
now.
If you actually look around a little bit and think it through, I think it's pretty risky as it is.
Pretty much. You know, and again, it's Oklahoma, and they're not the only ones. You're going to see state after state, corporation after corporation make these changes. Boeing made the announcement last week. They found a way to get out of it. And as you said, Al, legally.
They just
without filing bankruptcy.
Boeing is going to get out of it. Is they're going to load their employees onto large aircraft and make them disappear over Vietnam or someplace like that. I think that's how they plan to do it.
I had another Market Watch came out today, Tuesday, March 11th, and I tried to find the complete article, but it was no longer available on Market Watch. This has been talked about before, but the a U.S. investment management firm filed a lawsuit against the five banks that actually set the London benchmark gold price, saying that the banks have conspired to manipulate the price for gold by their own gain. Now, documents seen by the Wall Street Journal show that AIS Capital Management, and they are based in Connecticut, are the ones who filed a class action complaint late Monday against Barclays, Deutsche, HSBC, Bank of Nova Scotia, Societe Generale, and they actually filed the suit in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. And so it is on behalf of the AIS and other investors who held or traded gold and gold derivatives that were settled based on the gold fix or who held or traded COMEX gold futures or options from 2004 to present. So again, I tried to find the complete article on it, and it was no longer posted. And it was a recent posting, so I found was a little surprised that I, you know, couldn't find much about it. But
yeah, it's surprising. Once in a while, you see that you go fishing for an article that was there, and it's only been there for a little while, and you go looking for it, and it's not there anymore.
Oops.
Well, I understand.
But where it goes, who knows? I mean, there's we all know the corruption. I mean, hey, when you can, you know, when you can manipulate and you admit, and our own little Timmy Geithner was aware of it. You had the LIBOR rates. That to me, again, that was the biggest scandal ever. Of course, the gold scandal is going to, you know, beat that scandal. But now they have the Bank of England, Governor Mark Carney. He's seeking to shield his institution from being dragged further into a scandal about the alleged manipulation of the foreign exchange markets. So you have regulators in Europe and in the U.S. that are investigating several banks for manipulating foreign exchange markets. Major firms like Citigroup, Barclays, they have actually suspended some traders. Somebody's got to get their fingers smacked. And you'll see a couple million or billion dollars paid in fines without accepting any responsibility.
Criminal liability. Plus, I have no idea how much they're going to keep in profits. You know, if you could rob banks on the basis of if they catch you, you have to pay 20 or 30% of whatever it was you stole, and you admit no criminal liability, bank robbery would be a lot more popular than it is right now. And it's the same thing for manipulating the markets. If you only have to give back a fraction of whatever it is you managed to acquire by means of theft, all right, so what? So you had to give back a third of it. Or 20%, or I don't know what number it is. I don't know, but I doubt that the fine they paid is equivalent to the profit that they acquired. And if that's true, then what can you expect? You can expect more market manipulation. And it's not going to stop until several people wind up spending the next 40 years of their lives in a federal penitentiary. And not just mid-level managers, when members of the board of directors and vice presidents and presidents of the corporation suddenly find themselves conducting their affairs in the Gray Bar Hotel, then the rest of them will get the message and say, you know, I don't think I want to manipulate the markets anymore. But as long as all you get is a slap on the wrist and pay a fine that is less than what you stole, you know, it becomes irrational not to try to steal the money. Talk about a moral hazard. Yes, it's the wrong thing to do, but the profits are so attractive and lucrative. How can you resist? And the government just does this because presumably the government is operating hand in glove with the criminals that are robbing, that are manipulating in order to rob, and they're undoubtedly kicking back a certain amount of funds to people in Congress, people in the White House. Influence is being purchased, and therefore we admit no criminal liability. One of those things it's just another one of those things, you look at it and it makes you wince. You can't laugh about it. Maybe you do laugh about it, but you don't want to.
You know what's amazing is they're so all in it. For it to have happened for the length of time.
I know.
I mean, they say 2004, but folks, I hate to tell you, it's been going on a lot longer before that. I mean, it just got to the point where it was easily recognizable.
Yeah.
They've been manipulating the markets forever, ever, you know, for a very long time. So, you know, once they, late 80s, probably after, plunge protection team.
Ronald Reagan. Protection team.
That's correct.
We can talk more about that if you like when we return. It's time for break. Get some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
don't make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. And Melody really does have quite a discount for you folks today. Pay attention to this. This is a remarkable deal. Go ahead.
Yes, it is. Gold bullion coins, gold eagles, is the higher priced bullion coin over the Canadian maple leaves and the Krugerrands. And we can sell those today for $1,405, $1,405, which is a very good price for 1 ounce gold eagle coins. But for $100 more, you can purchase a mint state 62 $20 Liberty gold piece that no longer is mass produced. It provides privacy, protection, performance, and for you're paying $100 more than a bullion gold coin. And that also includes your shipping costs. So it's an incredible buy, and you need to call us at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You can buy one or 100 mint state 62 $20 Liberty gold pieces. These would be certified by NGC or PCGS. Dates are random, our choice. These would all be dated prior to 1907, but they're beautiful. Everyone is looked at before they're sent out. You don't get any spots, copper spots, or anything on them. They're very, very nice coins. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188.
All right, I've got an article here, just a comment on hyperinflation. And I actually wrote a little article on the subject and published it on my blog just yesterday. And one of the readers wrote back, sent me a comment, and They asked me to define hyperinflation. The article was about John Williams at shadowstats.com and an article that he'd written last December that predicted that we would see hyperinflation this year, 2014. So again, I wrote a commentary on it yesterday, and one of the readers wrote back and said, asked me to define hyperinflation, and I thought it was a great question because, so far as I know, there is no fixed definition for hyperinflation. And in the process of trying to reply and offer an answer to this, I came up with what I thought is a definition that I at least haven't heard before and at least seems plausible to me. Again, I told them, first off, I can't define hyperinflation. So far as I know, there's no absolute definition that's universally accepted other than a lot. Hyperinflation means a lot of inflation. I know that some economists say hyperinflation doesn't start until we have at least 50% the inflation rate is at least 50% per year. I'm inclined to view any rate of inflation that exceeds 25% as hyper. But when I think about it, I started to suspect that hyperinflation really means, it has two meanings. When I first thought about it, it started rolling around in the back of my mind, said, what's the definition? And the first definition is any rising rate of inflation that the government or Federal Reserve is unable to control. Might be 10%, might be 50%, might be 500%. But if the government can't control the rate of inflation, for me, that's evidence we're talking about hyperinflation. And the second definition would be a significant loss of confidence in the fiat currency by the general public. And that's what hyperinflation, that's what causes hyperinflation. When people begin to doubt that the dollar will be worth as much tomorrow as it is today, they are inclined to offer a lot of dollars when they go to buy something. Likewise, people are inclined to accept a lot of dollars for, say, a car. You want to buy your neighbor's used car, and it might be that it's worth $2,500 normally. But because you're in hyperinflation and you have lost confidence that the dollar is going to be worth as much tomorrow, a month from now, or a year from now as it is right now, it may be that if you're selling that car, you're not willing to take $2,500. You've got to have at least $3,500 if they're paying in cash because you know those dollars are going to be worth less. Likewise, the people who have the dollars know the dollars are going to lose value if they sit on them. They're going to lose value, and therefore they're inclined to pay more just to get rid of them and get something tangible. So prices go up, and the relative value of the dollar goes down. And the fundamental reason for hyperinflation is a loss of confidence in the value of the fiat currency by the general public. But on reflection, I realized that the two meanings I proposed were actually synonymous, much like two sides of the same coin. So I proposed that in combination, a single definition for hyperinflation might be a rising rate of inflation caused by a loss of public confidence in the fiat currency that the government and or Federal Reserve is unable to control. Now we've got the two things, what I saw initially is two definitions. I realize really they're both two sides of the same coin. The public loses confidence in the currency, and that loss of confidence is too great for the government to be able to control, and therefore the inflation begins to spiral upward in a way that's out of control, and when it does, we have hyperinflation. So I'm thinking that hyperinflation might be any rate of inflation not caused by government, and more beyond government's capacity to control. In the end, my definition of hyperinflation isn't based on a particular number or rate of inflation so much as any rising rate of inflation caused by the public rather than the government that the government's unable to resist or control. We've had persistent inflation for most of my lifetime that probably averages out to around 2% a year. This inflation has been caused and controlled by government rather than the people and or the free markets. We didn't make that 2% inflation, ladies and gentlemen. The government did. It wants it. It makes it happen. All right? Thus, we might define inflation, not talking about hyperinflation, inflation, the word inflation, as a reduction in the purchasing power of the fiat dollar that's been intentionally caused by, but also controlled and limited by the federal government. Said, okay, we're going to have 2% inflation, but we're not going to have any more. That was their object, all right? And they do that sometimes by just cooking the books. But regardless, they cause it. Government has been the primary cause of inflation in this country. But up until now, they've been able to control it. We might therefore not define hyperinflation as anything over a specific rate of inflation. Like, say, 25%, that would be my pick. 50%, I think John Williams may subscribe to the 50% limit. Instead, we might define hyperinflation as any real rate of inflation caused by the people's loss of confidence in the dollar and beyond the control of the federal government or Federal Reserve to minimize. And any time the inflated inflation gets out of control, I'm saying you have hyperinflation. It's not a number. It's a loss of control by the government. And it's a number, it's a quantity of inflation that's caused by the people when they lose confidence in the dollar. And at the same time, the government loses, because the confidence in the dollar is lost, government loses the power to control or manipulate the rate of inflation. And now we have hyperinflation, not a function of a percentage per se, but a function of a loss of government power to control. Does that make any sense to anybody? Give us a call. What's our phone number here, Melody? Let's see if I can find our phone number and see if anybody wants to call.
Let me put my two cents in there, Al. May I?
Go ahead.
I agree with you. It's not about a percent, because if we took the percentage and we look at the cost that we're paying for things now, mm-hmm. we're far above 50%. I mean, basically, you could view it, if we were taking percentages, we're already in hyperinflation.
I don't agree with that. I'm not sure how you're calculating that, but you're not saying that prices are rising by over 50% a year right now.
Not per year, but what they have risen over a period of time.
No, I understand, but they calculate on an annual basis.
This
They're
is
talking
true. However, I mean, look at the prices that we pay today, and everyone says, well, gee, you know, there is inflation. You're darn right. We have significant inflation.
2% on 2% on 2%, it keeps rising.
But we have more than 2% a year.
Yeah, Williams thinks we might have 9% right now.
I think in some areas it could even be more than that. It depends. I think we become such a, things, one department has deflation, another department, area is inflation, but over a long period of time. My point, Al, was I agree. There is no percentage point to define hyperinflation when you look at what we're paying for everything today.
No, I agree. Not a rate. There's no fixed rate. And this is consistent with a little bit I've read about this. It's not as if I'm an expert on the subject, but what I have read indicates that there's no consensus on what rate constitutes hyperinflation. Some people go for 50%. Some people say 25 or 30. I don't know. And that lack of consensus means there is not a clear definition of hyperinflation. And that makes it suspicious. How is it that there isn't a clear definition? You know, it's part of the reason why I think maybe we've been looking at it the wrong way. And maybe hyperinflation is not about a rate of inflation, but a loss of government's ability to control inflation. All right? It's about power, not about rate. It's about power. Or the absence of power, or at least that's what I imagine. If anybody wants to call in and comment on this, 1-800-596-8191.
It is also the ability of the people to pay.
I don't know where it all goes, but it's loss of confidence is the first thing. People lose confidence in the currency, and then they start, because they don't believe it'll be worth as much in the next days, weeks, months. They want more now to compensate for the loss that's built in. They know it's losing purchasing power right as we speak, and they have to dump it. I mean, I saw articles about Zimbabwe were people who took, they sold something in the morning. Anything, whatever they had to sell, I don't care. It was a bicycle or something they found in the woods. If they can sell it in the morning for a million Zimbabwe dollars, they had this. They had to turn around and take the million Zimbabwe dollars and use it to buy something before noon that day, just in a couple hours, or they would lose so much of the value of the 1 million Zimbabwean dollars if they didn't use it to buy some food or some groceries, eggs, bacon, ham, whatever it was they had to have. If they didn't do it within hours, they might lose 10, 15, 20% just in hours. So the whole thing becomes a kind of madness. But what's the cause of the madness, Melody? Fiat currency. You can't have hyperinflation when you've got gold. Not so far as I'm able to understand. Well, gold and silver, you can have price changes. I understand that. There's a certain amount of fluctuations that go along. But in general, you're pretty much steady state with gold and silver. Right? You can't, so far as I'm able to understand, you can't have hyperinflation with gold. You can't have hyperinflation with silver. It just isn't going to happen. So how do we get into this madness? If we do get into it, well, it'll be a consequence of accepting paper currencies. 1933 gave up the gold. 1964 to 68, we gave up the silver. Domestically in 71, we gave up the gold internationally. Now we have a piece of paper. As long as we have confidence in the piece of paper, it works. We lose confidence in the piece of paper, it doesn't work. And that's so bizarre. Because even if individual members of the audience maintain confidence, say, I'm still confident, I believe in the dollar, all right, fine. But if enough other people say, uh-uh, I don't believe in it, guess what? Your confidence counts for zero. And your paper dollars turn out to be worthless or substantially less valuable than they were when you acquired them. What else, Melody?
And the same thing can hold true for your bonds.
Sure. Anything denominated in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because the bonds, at minimum price of the bonds, the interest won't amount to anything. You buy a bond and it might say it has 5% interest or 10% interest. Well, that becomes on the original size of the bond. Imagine you bought a bond for $100,000 and the interest rate was 5% per year. That would be the coupon on the bond, you get 5% a year on the bond. But there's also the price of the bond. What will people pay on it? If you paid $100,000 for that bond and the interest rate seemed attractive and we go into hyperinflation, what's your bond going to be worth? You're not going to want to sell it for just $100,000. And what are you going to get for it if it only makes 5% inflation in a period of hyperinflation, or 5% interest in a period of hyperinflation? You can get caught again. I mean, you know, we harp on this on a regular basis on the program. It is a persistent theme. But if you are prepared to keep your dollars, your wealth, store it in the form of a paper currency, you are accepting a considerable risk. You may get along just fine with it for the next year or two, or who knows? I don't know. But inevitably, a dollar has to go the way of all fiat currencies, and that means it disappears. And when it disappears, what happens to the wealth of people holding their wealth stored in the form of paper dollars? It'll also disappear. You will lose your assets because you chose paper, which is a promise to pay, rather than something tangible like gold or silver, which is an actual payment, not a promise to pay, a payment. If you're holding the gold in your hand, you've been paid. If you're holding a piece of paper in your hand, you're holding an IOU. I'm Alfred Adisk. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Melody Cedarstrom. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, and we have a caller, Donald from Pennsylvania. Hello, Donald. How are you doing?
Hi, Al and Melody. Hey, one thing for you, you said about inflation, and now we get inflation from the price increases, but our packages are getting smaller in the store.
Yeah.
So your cost per ounce per item is going up, even though you think that you're not. Yeah, like a package would be like a pound, now it's like 14 ounces.
No.
Same price, or at the same price, or even more.
And the size of the containers is shrinking. You can go and buy spaghetti sauce in the store, and it used to be a fairly large jar. Now you buy it to get it home, and you can see that it has shrunk. They have designed the jars where they look like they're large, but they're really not. And we're going to reach a point where they're going to be selling jars of spaghetti sauce in little jars the size of Babe Gerber baby food, if you catch my drift. And I'll give you another one, a good one. A friend of mine caught on to the idea, changed the had to do something to repair the toilet paper dispenser in his bathroom. And when he changed it around, he discovered and realized that they're shrinking the size of toilet paper rolls. The rolls are not as wide as they used to be, for one thing. And there's another point. You know that cardboard tube in the middle of the roll?
Smaller.
No, they're making it larger diameter, so there's less actual paper on the roll. So the roll is narrower, and it's got a bigger void in the middle, which means there's technically less paper on the roll.
That's why when you go look at your packages and look at your label in the store, because a lot of times now I think to pass the law, you have to unit price per ounce per item. A lot of people don't pay attention to that stuff, and they
will
I work at a grocery store, and I've been there 8 years, and I see people just come in, they just grab stuff off the shelf and go and pay no attention to what they're getting. Then they complain about the price, but they don't compare price or nothing. Just grab and go.
Well, what you're talking about are people who simply trust that grocery store. They have learned to trust that institution. They've been there over the years, and they know they walk in the door and get a jar of spaghetti sauce, and they just grab one off the shelves. And they don't realize till they get home, if they ever realize, they don't, you know, there's not as much spaghetti sauce on the spaghetti as we usually get. And they might kind of wonder about it, but they don't necessarily pick up on it. But the point is, they succumb to that problem. They are deceived precisely because they trust the entity that's selling the product. Yeah, they're telling you. They're not cheating you. They're telling you, look, there's only 14 ounces in this can. There used to be 16,
yeah.
Now there's 15. They're telling you the price per ounce down below and the rest of that if you don't want to pay any attention. But if people don't trust, or excuse me, if people do trust, they don't bother to read the labels. They just grab the jar. They go on their way. And there's a point to this lesson. This is the same fundamental problem that we see with people who trust the government for their pensions. For example, we just talked earlier on the program, Melody brought up that they were going to change the pension laws relative to new government employees starting in 2015. Well, it'll all be legal. It'll be on. You'll be able to read the label if you can read, if you care to read. You'll be able to see what's going on. But they won't come right out and say, well, we intend to deceive you. We intend to rob you. We intend to take advantage of your trust. But if you are less trusting, then you can sit back and say, I think I need more information, or maybe I need to look further for a job. I don't think this is a good situation. Donald, we got another caller waiting on
okay,
the line.
I'll talk to you later then.
Thanks
Donald.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. We got Dave from Michigan. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Al. Melody. Melody, did you get that airline tracker site I sent you yesterday?
I don't think I did.
It has every airline, its position, its altitude, its speed, destination, and you can just put the cursor on any plane, and there's thousands of them on the screen, and they know where they are. Now, here's the, hope I don't get in trouble for this, the conspiracy of all conspiracies. Remember when the United States shot down the Iranian airliner because the transponder was allegedly military instead of passenger, and our destroyer shot it down? Well, there's two Iranians on board this plane. Now, what if the two pilots are in on this deal? They take the plane down below the deck. They landed someplace, and of course, you got the two guys in back there holding the passengers down. Now, at a later date, they use this plane to substitute a flight to the United States. And they can do their dirty business with it, actually a poor man's bomber. Back 40 years ago, we didn't sell 707s to China, he says, because the surplus ones, because we said that they could be used as a poor man's B-52. And now all of a sudden, some plane's missing. No wreckage, no oil slick, nothing floating. And I think that plane, this is my theory, it's a good one. I was out there chipping ice, and I was thinking, you know, so it could have gone down below the deck, and they've got this plane someplace, and they're going to use it sometime later.
Well, it's something strange happened. No one seems to know what that is. I read an article briefly today where someone was observing that apparently the flight went off its flight path for some considerable amount of time before it just all of a sudden disappeared. And everything disappeared at once. All of the electronics, and there were apparently several different transponders on the plane that were constantly connected to the radio system back at wherever. They all went dark at the same time. Now, that sounds like either an explosion or it sounds like some sort of something coordinated. It's very strange. Your conspiracy theory is intriguing. You want to hijack a plane and steal it, and with the possibility of using it as a weapon later on. It's an intriguing theory. I'm not going to say that I don't assume that you absolutely believe in it, but you're just raising it as a possibility.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, well, Dave, I found that you sent me yesterday, and I pulled it up. And, yeah, that's what I was saying yesterday. How can you not know where a plane is at? It's tracked from the minute it leaves the ground and the minute it disappears.
Right.
They should have exact coordinates on it.
Yeah. Some professional pilot, you look how these planes follow routes one after another. And if you turn a plane around and you're having problems, and you don't call in a mayday or you don't notify anybody that you've turned around and you're coming back the other way, unless you really lose altitude, you're going to fly into other planes coming down the same track. So something's really fishy with this, I think, that they can't explain it. There's a lot of the new 777s now will have carbon fiber wings. They're talking about that. But the 787 is all carbon fiber, and that's all honeycomb. Something like that.
Yeah, but they're cracked.
Bits and pieces that float. It's not going to sink like a DC-3.
No, you wouldn't think that this can simply be lost. Regardless of what happens, it's hard to understand if you can completely lose an airplane like this, just lose track of it completely, then there's something fundamentally, there's a huge security flaw in the navigation systems of those planes. One other point, I presume they're all navigating on GPS.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to presume that insofar as they are guided by satellites, I don't know how GPS works necessarily, but I'm going to presume that the satellite and or whoever's connected up to the satellite has a continuous record of where that airplane is.
Where it actually is.
Uh-huh.
So where did it disappear? That's where to look for it, and yet nobody's finding anything, or at least that nobody's admitting that they found
there's,
it.
Maybe there's another Bermuda Triangle.
Well, you know, because
yeah, it would be a Chinese maze.
Trust us. Because other foreign countries didn't trust us, a lot of them put their own GPS system up in the air because we can vary ours to be off. And we have, like for boating, you have within 200 miles, you can have a correction center, and it changes every day. And so you have to be close enough to the correction center to correct. And like once a missile's launched, it's launched where it's going to go. So what Europe did is they put their own satellites up. So there's a lot of variables. It's just not U.S. controlled anymore.
Whoever's got it, it's almost inconceivable that a Boeing 777 isn't operating on somebody's GPS, whether it's China's or Europe's or the United States or who, but it's almost inconceivable. Those pilots are not just, you know, flying by the seat of their pants and saying, I think we need to head about northwest to get where we're going. GPS is
they say that the pilots are depending so much on the automatic pilot now that they're losing their ability to fly the plane in case of an emergency.
I understand. Yeah. They've become passengers. They've got some of the best seats in the house up there in the front. You get your own stewardess. There's only, you know, got one stewardess to serve just two guys up there. This is a deal. There's first class and there's pilot class. Pardon me?
After 9/11, Bush was on TV, and he says, you know, if a plane's hijacked, he just pushes a button and ground control takes over. So they nobody can force the pilot. It's out of his hands after that time, remote control. And the guy next to him was pulling on his sport coat sleeve like, shut up. So they've got those systems, and if you're a couple pilots and you're in on this deal, you just shut everything off.
Even that's probably hard. I don't know what happened here. Again, this is a mystery.
No.
We'll watch and see. I'm going to assume that we will discover what happened, or at least we'll find some evidence. You know, but this is just strange.
Yeah.
Very strange.
That's my theory for today.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Okay.
Thanks, Dave.
Have a good day. Jim is on the line waiting to talk to us from Pennsylvania. Hello, Jim.
Back to the currency and inflation and hyperinflation. I think when you get to the point where it becomes so inconvenient for the people to purchase things, like a new GM truck might be $45,000, $55,000. And then you get to that point, either you have to put currency in the people's hands directly. Like G.W. Bush did, about 8-9 years ago when he gave everybody a $250 treasury check or $500 treasury check to even meet expenses. Other than that, the only way for people to continue is to devalue the currency. And I remember a private conversation I had with Bob Chapman years ago, about currency devaluation in Europe in recent years. And I mentioned to Bob, I said, geez, back in 1960, remember, De Gaulle devalued the franc 100 to 1. 100 new French, old French francs for one new French franc. And that saved France because the destiny of a nation is linked inexplicably with the currency. As the currency goes, so the nation goes. Bob said, you know what? I was in Paris when that happened in 1960. And that's exactly what occurred. If a country goes into hyperinflation like Weimar inflation, then not only is the currency destroyed, but the country is destroyed too. So exactly. Powers that be want to save the United States, they have to save the dollar, even if it goes to devaluation, 10 to 1, 100 to 1, 50 to 1, whatever. If they don't, and they go into hyperinflation, wheelbarrow Weimar inflation, then the country is politically and physically destroyed.
And what that really signals, when we go into that hyperinflation where you need a wheelbarrow currency to buy a loaf of bread, it signals that the public has lost so much confidence in the currency that the price of things just goes up every single day. They anticipate it'll go with more devaluation tomorrow and so on. Inevitably, it skyrockets. It doesn't last long, but it is an evidence of the death throes of that nation's economy. Now, the economy can be rebuilt later on, but first, that dollar kills everything, including debt, and therefore it kills assets. It reduces
right,
people who save their money in the form of paper currency. They thought they had wealth.
Right.
They get wiped out by it.
Yeah, they have to have a means to put that currency, either physical or digital, into people's hands so they could spend it to get a Weimar inflation. Other than that, the best way would probably be a devaluation.
Devaluation.
And then all debts, public and private, would be essentially reduced or maybe even wiped out. And then you start all over again with the inflation and debasement cycle.
But here's the problem. How do you start all over again after you've lost most of your capital? When you have that hyperinflation, it wipes out the capital that's being stored in the form of pension funds and savings accounts and bonds and stocks and the rest of that.
Oh, yeah.
It ruins them. And these people now, how do you start the system with no capital?
Later on, it might take another 100 years, and then that cycle will peak again.
I don't know that it'll take another 100 years, but it might take 5 or 10 to begin to restore, rebuild your capital so you can actually make investments.
For the United States to survive, we need devaluation of the dollar. We need 100 to 1, 50 to 1, whatever.
And you know what else we need, Jim? We need to say goodbye because we're out of time. Thank you for your call, Jim. We'll talk to you another time. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Jim from Pennsylvania, Dave from Michigan, Don from Pennsylvania, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.